Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. You all are our only case set for oral submission this morning. We have many other cases set for submission without argument, but I understand counsel have announced the time they would like to argue with the clerk and that you all are ready to proceed.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your
Honor. Right. And it's our pleasure today. We have visiting judge Justice Charles Blyle sitting with us. And this is Justice Mark Pittman, and I'm Sue Walker, and we will be your panel today. So with that, counsel, you may proceed. I'm sorry, I would like the clerk to call the case. I skipped over that. We have a recording going, so I would like to, for her to call it so the recording's clear.
The court will now call the state from Texas versus Stephanie Clemens. May it please the court, Ms. Lara Thomas to argue for the appellant, Mr. Michael Nolan to argue for the appellant.
Thank you. Now you may proceed.
May it please the court. Judge Burgess in this case had the discretion to reconsider the motion to suppress, but he inappropriately made credibility determinations and factual determinations disregarding the factual determinations that were made by Judge Bogorski. On page 5 of the record, Judge Burgess stated that he would rely on Judge Ski's factual determinations in addition to State's Exhibit 1, which was the testimony from the first hearing. On that same page, he asked both sides for legal arguments on the case. At the close of evidence and argument, he then made oral findings that were factual findings and granted the motion to suppress. It was inappropriate for him to make these determinations, and the Court of Criminal Appeals has addressed the situation a few times before. In Bass v. State from 1982, they found that factual determinations of a that a judge can accept factual determinations from a previous judge if there's no new evidence and a new hearing is not required.
Well, how do you respond to the argument that, in fact, all of his findings were basically conclusions of law based on the facts testified to by Officer Brown?
Judge Burgess, like Appelli, cites claims in his brief that Judge Burgess saw all the evidence, but he had not seen all the evidence. He didn't watch the video or the whiteboard that was used during testimony. But
how does that really matter as long as he doesn't make specific fact findings that are contrary to the fact findings made by Judge Pajorski, if I'm saying it correctly?
Well, and we could call him Judge Ski. I was in his court like 7 years ago, and he had us all call him Judge Ski, so if I slip up. He did make factual findings because he found that there was no evidence that it was the same car, and there was evidence that it was the same car. Officer Brown.
But is that a finding different than what Judge Ski made?
Yes, it is.
So Judge Ski made a finding that it was the same car, and Judge Burgess made a finding that it was not the same car.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Judge Burgess also, he also found that there was no evidence that Appelli was evading arrest, and Judge Ski found that there was evidence that she was evading arrest.
Let me ask you, what if Judge Ski had gone on vacation and while he was on vacation he decided that he wanted to reconsider his ruling? Could he go back and get on the bench or write an order and say, upon reconsideration, I now do this?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, he could do that. And Judge Ski was in the best situation to make factual findings, look at credibility, and resolve inconsistencies in the testimony because he observed the actual hearing.
But also, couldn't he do that because he was the presiding judge? Isn't that something a presiding judge can do, reconsider a ruling and enter a different ruling?
Yes, Your Honor. And Judge Burgess also could reconsider the ruling since he, the timeline is laid out, I think, in both of our briefs about why we are in a different court. But once Judge Burgess was presiding, he did have the discretion to reconsider the motion. The issue is that he did not see all the facts, and he made factual findings that conflict with Judge Ski, who did see all the facts. and did see all the testimony, evidence.
I have a hard time understanding what's wrong with that.
Well, I would say the court should draw its attention to Garcia versus State in 2000, a court of criminal appeals case. And there, the court found that a second judge can't make findings based on a first judge's hearing, and that the first judge's determination of facts and credibility should have almost total deference. And the Court of Criminal Appeals likened the situation to an appellate court reading a transcript, saying that it was not appropriate for a second judge to make findings solely on a written transcript from the initial hearing. And
so that's your main area of contention here, is that the judge should have done a complete hearing where he took evidence, considered witnesses, et cetera, rather than just relying on the paper?
Yes, Your Honor. Either that or relying on Judge Ski's factual determinations in making his legal conclusions. And further, the state feels that even if the court doesn't think that he abuses his discretion by reconsidering the motion, that he abuses discretion by finding there wasn't reasonable suspicion and an exigent circumstance for the warrantless entry into the home based on the facts that Judge Burgess did review and based on Judge Ski's findings. Moving to the reasonable suspicion is based on the totality of the circumstances. And what Judge Burgess did and what the appellee is arguing is to take a piecemeal or divide and conquer approach to this evidence and not looking at the totality of the circumstances. Judge Burgess found an appellee claims that there's no evidence of the same car, but when Officer Brown saw the car hit the curb, it was a dark-colored vehicle. He saw it going westbound. He was headed eastbound. He was facing eastbound, and he did a U-turn. Once he did the U-turn, he briefly lost sight of appellee, but some civilians approached him and told him, "There's the car. There it is. It's driving crazy. It's an Infiniti."
So once he loses sight of the car, he has reasonable suspicion to stop any dark-colored vehicle.
No, Your Honor, I don't think he has reasonable suspicion to stop any dark vehicle. But once he does the U-turn, he doesn't have his lights on yet, and he's going to investigate the situation. But then that's when the civilians tell him that there's an Infiniti driving crazy and point to a car that's headed westbound. And at that point, the car that he saw hit the curb was heading westbound, and it was a dark-colored car. So he knows it's a dark-colored car, and then he's told by civilians that there's a Infiniti that's driving crazy, and there's no other cars on the road. And one thing that Judge Burgess found is that Officer Brown said he didn't know if it was the same car. When he saw the taillights that the civilians were pointing to, he wasn't sure if it was the same car. But once he caught up to the car, which the car turned on Arbor Hills and he followed and quickly found it, he testified on page 32 and 34 that he knew it was the car that he had seen. So he had pulled over the car that he knew he had seen, not just because it was a dark vehicle, but because there were no other cars on the road. It was an Infiniti, like the civilian said. It was going westbound, and it was the only car that he found on the road. And the fact that he lost sight momentarily does not negate reasonable suspicion, especially considering he testified twice that he knew it was the vehicle that he saw hit the curb. Judge Burgess found and appellee argues.
The problem is, even if it was the same car, is he said hitting the curb wasn't reasonable suspicion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Hitting the curb was not an offense, I believe, is what he testified to.
Yes.
So what's his reasonable suspicion? What are his articulable facts? What has occurred that has given him articulable facts to form a reasonable suspicion?
Well, on top of hitting the curb, looking at the totality of the circumstances, it's happening in Austin Ranch, which the officer testified to is known for having intoxicated persons, including DWIs. It's around a bar area, and it's around midnight. So while Judge Burgess was correct in finding that hitting a curb is not an offense, you don't have to have a traffic offense in order to have reasonable suspicion, because the acts can be inherently legal, but when you look at the totality of the circumstances here, the hitting the curb, DWI area, around bars, and then what the civilians had said, that she was driving crazy, leads to reasonable suspicion.
what if Judge Ski had stayed on this case and remained a judge and then woke up one morning and said, oh my gosh, I was wrong in that ruling, and then enter an order setting it aside and going the other way, just like Judge Burgess did? Would that be okay for Judge Ski to have done that?
Yes. As far as the first issue, Judge Ski could have changed his mind and changed the ruling. But given the facts in this case, the state very well might still appeal that based on there was reasonable suspicion and there were exigent circumstances. So Judge Ski could have changed, and we would not have issue one. State could not argue issue one because he was the judge who witnessed all the testimony and evidence and could make those changes. Judge Burgess, on the other hand, he could have reconsidered. For instance, in the first hearing, Judge Ski found that the garage was not a private place, which the state is not arguing that, because a garage is a private place. So if this case would have, if Judge Burgess would have reconsidered the motion and just found that, Judge Ski was wrong on whether a garage was a private place, he had the authority to do that. What we're arguing is that him reading the cold transcript without watching the video and then making different factual findings and resolving the testimony of Officer Brown differently was the abuse of discretion.
What if he had not had a hearing? It's a new case. There's no hearing, and I'm entering this ruling the way Judge Ski did. And then he changes his mind without hearing evidence and saying, I think I might have been wrong. I'm not going to do that. Would there have been a problem with that?
So you're saying if he would have accepted Judge Ski's findings and then later reconsidered?
Changed his mind. Just on the paper, on the evidence, reconsidered.
And I think, again, Judge Burgess, he has the discretion to change his mind and file different rulings, and especially if it's about the conclusions of law. He can reconsider and change the court's ruling. But as far as the factual determinations that were made from him making a cold record, like Garcia says, it's similar to an appellate court not giving total deference to the fact finder in trial court. And that's what Bass and Garcia liken the situation to.
But as courts of first impression with joint jurisdiction, so to speak, that it's not a power issue. It's just a matter of changing a ruling. A district judge does that all the time. A county court of law judge does that.
Yeah.
It's just hard for me to understand your position.
Well, our position is that he had the discretion. He can change a ruling. But the problem here is he changed a ruling without watching the video. For instance, Judge Ski found that Apelli was evading, and Judge Burgess found she wasn't. But Judge Burgess didn't watch the video where Officer Brown is shining a flashlight through the driver's side window into Apelli's face, which could lead to circumstantial evidence that she had intent to evade. And Judge Burgess just completely disregarded those findings, in finding that she was not evading and finding that there were
no... Isn't that a legal conclusion, not a factual determination?
Whether she was evading, yes, is a legal conclusion.
And
but
Judge Burgess can draw his own legal conclusions from the facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your position is that he just can't alter the facts that were found by Judge Bajorski without reviewing the record himself or reviewing all the evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. And in Bass and Garcia, they talk about it without him observing witness demeanor, it's also hard for him to make credibility determinations. And here we have Officer Brown. He's not the best witness for the state. When the other side is questioning him, he answers some questions in a confusing manner. But Judge Ski was there and witnessed and was able to make determinations on any inconsistencies Officer Brown said in his testimony. and able to resolve those inconsistencies.
One more. What if Judge Ski had remained on the bench, and 2 years later he said, oh my gosh, I think I was wrong, or I might have been wrong. I'm going to withdraw that order and enter another one. Would he have been prohibited from doing that?
He would not be prohibited, but as I stated, we wouldn't have the first issue, but if Judge Ski had done that and made the findings that Judge Burgess did, the state would have still appealed because the state believes there's still reasonable suspicion for the stop and the exigent circumstance of hot pursuit for the warrantless entry into the garage. So the state's not trying to say that a judge cannot do this. Like, the Judge Burgess could definitely reconsider the motion and file facts and findings of facts and conclusions of law. The issue is that he made factual determinations based on a cold record.
What? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
Judge.
Go ahead, Judge. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I would like to know exactly what facts you assert besides that the, and you can continue, that the car was not the same car, that you contend Judge Burgess made differently than Judge Ski. I mean, exactly what facts, not legal conclusions, just facts.
I'd have to look back at Judge Burgess's findings, but from what I remember, he put that there was no evidence that it was the same car. And to the contrary,
right, besides that one, because you mentioned that one already, besides that fact finding.
All other fact findings as far as the complete or just as far as the car?
If you know exactly which fact findings you contend Judge Burgess made differently than Judge Ski.
Besides the car, he also made the fact finding that Appellee did not notice Officer Brown during the hot pursuit, and Judge Ski found that Appellee did notice, which that turns into the legal conclusion that she was evading, but Judge Burgess found that there were no facts of that. And those were, he also found most of the other findings do have an element of a legal conclusion, and that goes to state's issues 2 and 3 about the reasonable suspicion and exigent circumstances. I'm out of time, unless...
I believe...
Go ahead, Judge.
I'm through. Go ahead and ask your question.
I'm fine.
We can add some extra time to the other side, please.
I would just like for you to give me some more detail on the Garcia case. Can you tell me the procedural circumstances where the second judge came in and made the inappropriate findings that you contend are similar to this case? How did the second judge reconsider the first judge's order in that case?
Well, that case was a voluntariness of confession, which are most of the cases, if not all of the cases I cite regarding issue one. And in that case, the first judge made a ruling, and I believe what happened is that the case was abated for findings or conclusions, and at that point, the first judge, and I think in Garcia it was a visiting judge, regardless, the judge was unavailable that sat on the case on Garcia. So we have a second judge that's coming in Garcia, and that's when the court found that that second judge couldn't look at the cold record and make factual determinations. He could only make factual determinations based on what the first judge found. As far as legal conclusions, I don't remember if Garcia addressed that, but I think that a judge can make different legal conclusions. It's the factual determinations that were the problem in this case and in Garcia.
No more questions. Unless
I just have one. What if Judge Ski had ruled the way he did the first time and then entered the same order that Judge Burgess did? Would that be different from what we've got here?
No, it would not, because it would be Judge Ski, the judge who was the judge at the initial hearing, observed all the evidence, all the testimony, so he could have changed his mind on factual determinations, and it wouldn't have been inappropriate like Judge Burgess in this case.
And again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but just this is my confusion. So it would have been all right if Judge Burgess would have conducted the second hearing, reconsidered Judge Ski's decision, if he would have taken it as an original type hearing where he heard evidence, heard witnesses. The main issue is, in your mind, that this violates the Court of Criminal Appeals holding in Garcia because Judge Burgess relied on the cold record?
Yes, Your Honor. Garcia, Jimenez is actually a Houston case, Velez and Bass all hold that, and they're all cited by the state in their brief, that the problem is the second judge coming in and reading the cold record from the first hearing and making an opposite factual determinations. State prays that this court reverse the granting of the motion to suppress of the trial court and remand the case back to the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would please add 2 extra minutes. Counsel, you'll have 2 extra minutes since we went over with
Thank you, Your Honor.
The state.
May it please the court, I'm Michael Mola. I represent appellee Stephanie Flemings. Your Honor, during the argument, state counsel, the state made a judicial admission that Judge Burgess did have discretion to reconsider the ruling for Judge Podorsky, and the state also made a judicial admission that a garage is a private place. I was going to address those issues today, but I will not because the state's already admitted on the record that, to appellee's favor.
I think that the state just admitted that Judge Burgess could make a different legal conclusion concerning the privacy of the garage, the private nature of the garage, than Judge Ski. I didn't hear them admit one way or the other.
Well, I believe I heard counsel for the state say that Judge Burgess has a discretion to reconsider, and that the garage is a private place. Of course, the court can look at listen to the recording later. But in any event, the state discusses that the appellee and myself, we did a divide and conquer approach, and that's just not the case. Do they have the? Okay, I'm going to direct the court's attention to a flow chart that I prepared. Your Honors, this flow chart represents the totality of the circumstances of what happened in this case. You all have a copy of this in front of you. It's too small to see here. We start February 8, 2012. Officer Brown is in his patrol car on the 6700 block of Winhaven. He sees a dark colored car hit the curb. Doesn't describe what kind of model it is, doesn't describe anything other than a dark colored car. He loses sight of the dark colored car. He makes a U-turn, drives, and then he sees two citizens. They say the car is going that way and is driving crazy. He doesn't know whether these two citizens were men and women. He doesn't remember if they were intoxicated. He remembers nothing about them at all. Now, we don't expect the officer to know the identity of these persons, but he knows nothing about them at all other than they said the car is driving that way and is driving crazy. And then he sees a dark colored car turn about 900 to 1,200 feet in front of him. Now, Your Honors, 900 to 1,200 feet is between 3 to 4 football fields. That's a dark colored car he starts going after. He again loses sight of the dark colored car. Now, he doesn't know whether that dark colored car that he saw after the two unknown citizens pointed out a car is the same car that he saw 3 or 4 football fields in front of him. But he loses sight of the car again. Then he makes a turn onto Arbor Hills, and then he sees a black Infiniti or dark Infiniti. Now, he doesn't know whether that black Infiniti or dark Infiniti is the same car that he saw 3 or 4 football fields in front of him. He doesn't know if that's the car that he saw almost hit the curb. He doesn't know if that's the car that the two unknown citizens pointed out to him. He didn't see the dark color car, any of the dark color cars, whether they're the same car or three different cars, weave between the lanes, cross over a lane, or do anything that would amount to reasonable suspicion to stop a vehicle. He admits that driving crazy is not an offense. We're on the third row of this flow chart, second bubble. He admits hitting the curb is not an offense. He did not at any time suspect driving while intoxicated. He did not suspect any other offense. Now, keep in mind, Your Honors, we're talking about credibility, as the state argues. This flowchart and the facts that I detailed in my brief are strictly based on the word of Officer Brown. We're not challenging the credibility of Officer Brown as far as what he said. We're just taking his words and putting them into this flowchart and into the analysis. So as far as, you know, and I'll address Garcia momentarily, as far as Judge Burgess not properly determining the credibility of Officer Brown and making a different credibility determination, that was just not the case here.
Well, I think it kind of comes down to if Judge Ski found Officer Brown credible, then all of his testimony is credible, right? Not just the testimony favorable to one side or the other. So, and I think that if all of his testimony is credible, if all of Officer Brown's testimony is credible, then the question comes down to whether in reconsidering Judge Ski's ruling, Judge Burgess has to view anything in the light most favorable to what Judge Ski did. And I think the answer is no, isn't it?
Your Honor, it is no. And I'm going to quickly, I'll come back to the flowchart momentarily. I'm going to quickly segue into Garcia. The interpretation of Garcia, Justice Pittman, you asked for the interpretation. What actually happened in Garcia is that there were actually two separate trials in question here. Okay, it wasn't simply a trial, appeal, and abatement to the same trial. There were two separate trials. During the first trial, a Jackson v. Deno hearing was held to determine the voluntariness of the defendant's confession. That first judge granted the motion and enters finding of fact. Okay? The case goes to the Court of Appeals, goes to the Court of Criminal Appeals. By the time it gets back, there's a second judge on the case, and there's a second trial against the same defendant for the same indictment. During that, prior to the second trial, without conducting a hearing, without allowing the parties to attend a hearing and to submit evidence should the parties choose to, the second judge simply took the cold record from the first hearing and did a paper ruling off the first hearing and entered different findings than what the first judge did. That's actually the procedural history of Garcia. The Court of Criminal Appeals said that the second judge was not authorized to hold a paper hearing only without giving the parties the opportunity to appear and present evidence. The Court of Criminal Appeals cited Bass versus State as an example of where it would be acceptable for a second judge to make a different determination. In Bass versus State, the issue was that if evidence on an issue has already been presented outside the presence of a jury and the judge who heard the evidence files findings of fact, a second judge may reconsider that evidence, or in his discretion, he may order that a new hearing be held. That's exactly actually what Judge Burgess did here. We filed a motion for reconsideration, about a year and a half ago. The case was set two times. One of the times that the case was set, it was reset and continued because Officer Brown, who the state wanted to bring to the hearing, was not available. We finally get to the March 24, 2017 reconsideration hearing. Officer Brown shows up. I was there, Your Honors. At that point, the state agreed to release him. Now, they could have put Officer Brown on the stand. They could have put that video into evidence. The state chose not to do so. And in not doing so, you know, the court specifically made findings. The record will reflect that both sides have agreed, and unless the court desires otherwise, that the best evidence at this point would be the record from the prior hearing, along with Judge Pojorski's findings that were entered on May 16, 2013. So Judge Burgess actually closely followed the requirement in Bass versus State, the state has agreed that he has the right to reconsider it. His right to reconsider it is almost unfettered when it comes to his discretion to reconsider it. This issue was discussed, and I cited this in my brief, in State versus Hill. State versus Hill was a case where the presiding judge of the 204th District Court elected to have a hearing on an allegation by Mr. Hill that there was prosecutorial misconduct. Allegation was that the elected district attorney of Dallas County at the time took a bribe in exchange for returning indictments against Mr. Hill. And the Fifth Court of Appeals reversed the presiding judge's ruling on the issue that she had no right to conduct a hearing, a pretrial hearing on that issue. The case was appealed down to the Court of Criminal Appeals. The Court of Criminal Appeals reversed 9-0 and said that a presiding judge under Article 2801 of the Court of Criminal Procedure has near unfettered discretion to conduct a pretrial hearing on any matter. And an abuse of discretion does not occur unless the trial court acts arbitrarily or unreasonably. I'm very well familiar with State versus Hill because I argued it at the Fifth Court of Appeals, I argued it in Austin, and argued it again on remand a few weeks ago. So the issue that Judge, or the conclusion that of the state, that Judge Burgess didn't have the right to reconsider and enter new findings just simply is not correct. Did I answer your question, Your Honor, adequately on the issue of whether Judge Burgess?
Yes, okay. Yes, thank okay. you, sir.
Okay. Now, going back to my flowchart, we do know that Officer Brown was behind Ms. Flemings for about 10 to 15 seconds. That's the fourth row of the flowchart, the far right, bottom right corner. At that point, she enters the attached garage. Before the garage door closes and without a warrant, Officer Brown enters a garage. Now, you're talking about issues whether Officer Brown had probable cause or reasonable suspicion to enter. He stated unequivocally that when he entered that garage, he was not investigating a crime. He wasn't even investigating a Class C misdemeanor. That's unambiguous as far as what he believed he was actually doing when he entered Ms. Fleming's garage without a warrant. So you have no warrant. You have admission by Officer Brown that no offense occurred. There was no exigency. I discuss in detail in my brief on pages 67 to 68 what would be an exigency. You know, Officer Brown was not providing aid or assistance to persons that he thought needed assistance. He wasn't protecting police officers or other persons from a person that he believed may have been armed or dangerous, and he was not preventing the destruction of evidence or contraband. He didn't know whether a crime had even been committed, even a Class C had been committed. So no reasonable suspicion, no probable cause, no community caretaking. He did not even know whether the car that Ms. Fleming drove into her garage was the same car that he saw almost hit the curb, was the same car that the two unknown citizens pointed out to him, was the same car that he admits he lost two times. So what appears, according to Officer Brown's testimony, and only his testimony, is that he picked the first dark-colored vehicle that he saw once he was in the vicinity of Ms. Fleming's home. That's what happened in this case, factually. So, you know, there was no reasonable suspicion. There was no probable cause. You know, the totality of circumstances is adequately, in my opinion, summarized in the 16-point flowchart. I apologize, the flowchart is a little crowded, but I thought all 16 of those points needed to be addressed in it. I didn't want to do a multiple page flowchart. There was discussion by the state, I wanted to address this, about hot pursuit. There was no possible hot pursuit. You don't pursue a alleged suspect in a hot pursuit situation when you say that I don't know if that suspect or that person that I'm pursuing committed a crime. Okay, hot pursuit applies when you're pursuing an armed and fleeing felon and person known, that there's any indicia that the person is dangerous, or whether the person is suspected of committing a felony. You just can't, in Texas, and under Article 3823, and Article 1, Section 9 of our Texas State Constitution, and the Fourth Amendment, you just can't enter a person's home because you suspect something may have been amiss, but you don't know what it was. You know, there was discussion by the state that, well, this could have been evading arrest. Well, Officer Brown was not investigating anything regarding evading arrest. He never said I was investigating evading arrest. That was a conclusory statement that was made by Judge Podorsky. Well, he could have been investigating evading arrest. Well, if the officer wasn't investigating that, the officer says that I entered the home. I had no facts to enter the home. I entered the home. I didn't even have knowledge of a Class C misdemeanor. You can't make the jump from I didn't know that I was even investigating a Class C misdemeanor to evading arrest because it fits the state's narrative. And that's what the state is asking the court to do here. If there are any questions, that's actually all I have to present today.
Thank you, Mr. Mola.
Thank you.
Ms. Tomlin, rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. The divide and conquer of the facts that I spoke about come into play when appellee argues that Officer Brown didn't believe he had even a Class C misdemeanor, but on page 17 and 34 of State's Exhibit 1, he says he had reasonable suspicion for DWI, and the state would ask this court to read the transcript of State's Exhibit 1 in the totality. And while Officer Brown at one point said that the initial contact wasn't for DWI, it was for hitting a curb and suspicion, that testimony is later clarified and cleared up when he says it was for reasonable suspicion. And regardless, his subjective intent of whether there was reasonable suspicion is irrelevant if there was an objective basis for reasonable suspicion. As far as the hot pursuit exigent circumstance, hot pursuit is an exigent circumstance, and there are two prongs to it, whether the offense is sufficiently serious and whether the pursuit was immediate and continuous. And a jailable misdemeanor is sufficiently serious, and the state cited Randolph and Beaver in its brief that a jailable misdemeanor is sufficiently serious. And in addition, here, appellee was fleeing and or evading arrest, which fleeing is at least a Class B misdemeanor, and evading is a Class A misdemeanor, but a state jail felony since she was in a vehicle. And there's evidence that she was evading or fleeing because Officer Brown's overhead lights were activated. Officer Brown shined his flashlight in Appellee's face, and she, in turn, tried to get into her garage and close the garage. As far as the car, again, page 32 and 34 of State's Exhibit 1, the initial hearing, Officer Brown testifies that he knew it was the same car that he saw hit the curb, that he stopped, that it was the Infiniti that the civilians saw. It was traveling in the same directions as the civilians pointed, and he knew it was the same car. As far as the citizens' reliability, there must be an indica of reliability for them to be considered, for their statements to be considered in the reasonable suspicion. And anonymous tips are reliable if they're made in person by someone not affiliated with the police. And here, the citizens approached the officer unsolicited and in person told him that there it is, there's the car, it's driving crazy, it's an Infiniti, and should be found reliable. And when the state agreed that the best evidence was State's Exhibit 1, the transcript from the first hearing, and Judge Ski's findings of fact and conclusions of the law, the state relied that Burgess would consider Judge Ski's findings, and that goes back to the first issue in the state's brief about Judge Burgess not considering a few very important of Judge Ski's factual determinations.
How do you know he didn't consider those?
Because in Judge Burgess's findings, he found that there was no evidence that it was the same car. He found that there was no evidence that she was evading arrest. When Judge Ski found that there was evidence that it was the same car, because Officer Brown testified that it was the same car twice, and that there was evidence that she was evading arrest.
Thank you.
If there's no more questions, I'll conclude. The state prays that this court reverse the granting of the motion to suppress and remand the case to the trial court. Thank you.
Mr. Mola, Ms. Tomlin, thank you very much for your briefing and your arguments here today. They've been very helpful to the court. We appreciate you coming down from Denton. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and our clerk will adjourn court.